When you studied 1 year in Paris, and then
we went home.
And you already had Lauren. Lauren.
Oh yes, Lauren was 3 years old when we left Paris.
And did you sense any? Was there any sense about his musicality at that point?
That time, no.
No.
Well, there was an indication when he was about 8 months old. He had a friend of ours, an old friend, who subsequently became his piano teacher, who visited us. We had a house, we took a house in the country, about 15 kilometers from Paris. And we had a front yard, and Lola was out in the front yard all day long. Rain, snow, didn't make a difference. At this particular time, he was 8 months old, we had this visitor, a friend of ours, Mrs. Royal Armitage, Fanchon Armitage. And we were having dinner, and Lauren was in his high chair, and he started to hum the Brahms lullaby. Now, we've been hearing this from him, because that was the one record that he wanted to hear more than any other, because I used to put on records, listening to voices. And when he was in the room, if I'd put on, for instance, a Caruso record, and start playing it, he would say, "Ça, ça," the French word "ça" meaning that. And of course, I didn't know what he meant. I kept changing records. Finally, I come to the Brahms lullaby, sung by Vladimir Schumann-Heinck. And as soon as he heard that, his face lit up, and he was happy. He was happy. He loved that. And he used to hear it. I used to play it for him a lot. And he got to humming it. And we didn't think anything of it. It didn't startle us. It didn't astound us. She said, "How old did you say he was? You realize he's 8 months old and he's humming the Brahms lullaby? Weren't you surprised?" I said, "No, we weren't, because we got used to it." And she couldn't get over it. That was the first sign of musicality, although we didn't recognize it really as such.
So then when Lauren was 3 years old, you went back to...
Went back to our home.
In Los Angeles.
Yeah. And when he was about five, we started on the piano. No. I had a sister-in-law, my brother's wife, who was a concert violinist. And they had a daughter who was very talented on the violin. I started her teaching her when she was 3 years of age. And she was very much interested in teaching Lauren how to play the violin. Lauren had already started, yes, the violin. And we didn't want him to learn the violin.
He was 5 years old.
We did not want him.
Why?
Well, we knew so many musicians. He was having a very difficult time. Finally, including my brother. We just want to steer him away from that.
From music altogether?
Not to encourage him particularly.
So what happened to that?
Well, this is what happened. She finally prevailed upon us to give him a lesson. So reluctantly, we agreed. We went out to the house, Sherman Oaks Lodge, which had a very large room. And she, I don't know if you know anything about the violin.
Very little.
Well, the first lesson of violin is involved with holding the violin and drawing the bow on the strings. That's all you do. You don't use the left hand at all, just to hold the violin. You actually not hold the violin with your left hand, you're holding it with your chin. Your chin holds the violin up, not the hand. So, about a half an hour, she taught him how to hold the violin, how to draw the bow over each string. In about a half an hour, they stopped him. Then he went off to a corner when the rest of it became a social visit between my sister-in-law and my wife and myself. We started socializing. Suddenly I look over, way over the other end of the room, and there's Lauren sitting on the little seat of the bay window. He was sitting down, going over on the open string, playing one string after another. he was fascinated by the sound that he was making. Just for the G string, and then the D string, and the A string, and then going over and over again. Absolutely fascinated by doing that. Well, when we saw that, there was an interest, a real interest. 5-year-old boy being happy and drawn to the bow or the string to hear the sound. That means he's interested in sound, in music or whatever. Then he started. She started giving lessons. And she got a shot. She did this for about 6 months. And she couldn't do any more because she was more involved with her own daughter. So we got another teacher for him. So his father was his first love, and still is. He still practices the violin.
He still does.
He gets up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and among other things, practicing the violin, going over the scores, writing, composing. He's used to getting up in the morning since the very early days when I got up with him to teach him to read, to write, and to spell, and what else? Reading, writing, and spelling, that's enough.
At what age did you start that with him?
When he was five.
And was he in school already, in kindergarten?
He went to kindergarten when he was about 5 and a half. And the first day they immediately put him in the first grade because he was going to read and he could write and he could add. Oh yes, he could add, arithmetic, simple, adding.
You had been tutoring him.
And at that time the Board of Education frowned upon that, but now they're encouraging it. The children did that way all the time. The child, their ability is very much underestimated. They have to be exposed to it, give them a chance to absorb it and to be able to do it. Not to think, well, they're too young. You have to see if they're too young. You have to give them a chance.
So he continued, then he went from kindergarten, didn't go to kindergarten, he went to first grade?
First grade. And he was already doing violin. Now, wait a minute, 5, 6, at the age of 7, he got into conducting.
That's amazing. What started him conducting?
Well, when he was playing, this was all on that program, you might not have remembered. The piece that he was playing on the piano, they made very, very, very simple arrangements of some of the melodic parts of symphonies. And one of them was famous Haydn's so-called surprise symphony. La 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 la. Bang! Now, this is a device that Haydn deliberately used, because he was writing when people that listened to his music was all the aristocracy. And there he played music after the dinner, or during the dinner, and they'd be asleep. So he thought he'd have a little fun, and he started out very quietly. Bang! And they all woke up. Well, he played that on the piano. I happened to have a recording. I had the whole symphony recorded, but I had one which has just that part, that movement. So I got the score, the orchestral score, miniature score. Do you remember the first time you saw a conductor score? Or if you never saw one?
I don't think I've seen a conductor score. One of the first conductors that impressed me was your son. He was 12. Oh. He was a year younger than I was, and that whole Pittsburgh Symphony, listened to him, and that was what impressed me. I don't think I've ever seen a score.
The conductor score, I remember the first time I saw it, I was flabbergasted because there's all these instruments, you know, that the conductor has to follow and to know all the instruments of the orchestra. About
15 of them down a straight line. This. And when I thought that I couldn't, how does a conductor do this? Because on the piano or the violin, you have one line of music. On the piano, you have two lines. That's comparatively easy. But to have all these lines, how do you do it? So I've taught a lot of, I did a lot of teaching with him by indirection. Not straightforward. For instance, I wanted him to look at this piece, but I didn't, to this score, but I didn't want to give it to him. I wanted him to pick it up himself and look at it, so it would be a surprise to him. So he didn't know. I had no idea what it was, and that's what he did. I left it on the piano, and I knew that he would see it. He'd pick it up, which he did. He picked it up and he started looking at the pages. Well, this is in a score, as a conductor score. And I'm watching his face, looking for some kind of surprise or recognition or something. He has just, he's been doing this all his life. He kept turning the pages, one after the other, and I'm watching his face. No change of expression whatsoever. I said, "Lauren, how do you read this?" He said, "Up and down," as if to say, anybody, a child would know that.
And the child didn't know it.
He didn't know it. And he had never seen a score before, you understand. As I say, his music was on one line or two lines. Well, I said, I happen to have the recording of this on the record. Let's listen to it.
Haydn.
Yeah, Haydn. I said, it's in 2/4 time. He knew about that, because from his piano, for one, two, very easy to conduct. So I started him with doing that, and we did that for 10 minutes a day, for about 10 days, right after dinner. And the other 10 days, he said, "Daddy, I know this music by heart." I said, "Do you? Well, let's see." So we started over again at the beginning. I would stop him. Who comes in here? He would tell me, first violin. Who comes in here? Second violin. Or whatever. Flute, trumpet, clarinet, whatever. He would tell me. Never made a mistake. I said, well, to myself, this needs professional attention. But this is a talent. I didn't feel qualified to go out with him the way I have. I wanted someone supervise this and to give me an assessment.
And who did you go to?
I knew about 8 or 9 conductors in Los Angeles. Not one of them, when I told them how old he was, they laughed at me. They didn't even want to see him. They didn't want to see a demonstration of it. Oh, another incident. When he was already playing the piano, he'd just come out of the bathroom, he had flushed the toilet, you know the toilet makes a sound, it lingers for a while,
mm-hmm.
And he said, B-flat.
Oh my word.
Well, then we knew he had absolute pitch. Absolute pitch, it's that pitch, when you hear a sound, you can immediately identify it. Immediately. Not figuring it out, but it's immediately. That's absolute pitch. That was part of his talent, great part of his talent.
So whose ear did you finally?
I finally got a hold of Bachlinikov, Mr. Bachlinikov. He was the only one who said, bring him to me. Now, you would think, after all, there was a president, the greatest president of all presidents, was Mozart. After all, at 11 years of age, he was conducting his own opera.
Exactly.
His own opera. So, you know, you could say, who knows? Let's see. Just for curiosity alone. No, they didn't want to see him.
Now, was Bachlinikov in on the West Coast then, or were you?
Yes, he was. No, he was in the West Coast then.
Oh, okay.
He just come over from New York, from Europe.
Okay.
Now, look, this interview is supposed to be, I'm talking too much about Lauren. not that I want to talk about myself.
You can talk about anything that you want. It's your interview, and it's your son, and it's you and your career. And no, you're not. I'm finding it fascinating, so please continue.
Well, the story itself, of course, is very fascinating. And I don't tire to talk about it because it's such a great
then
part of
my life. Then please share it with us.
Anyway, so I brought it to him. And he told me to ask Lorne to step way back, away from the piano. And he would play the music from the piano. And Lorne conducted. Then he would stop him and ask him questions which I never asked him. For instance, what is the principal clause, principal theme? And he told me. What was the secondary theme? And he told me, he never had that kind of training. You get that kind of training, you study harmony. Well, for every cue that he was stopping, Lorne would tell him, give me right the exact answer. So about him closes the book, comes to me, and he says, I want you to call me tonight. That's all he said to me. Looks like I'm going to have to look for somebody else now. Because I didn't feel, the way he had talked to me, that he was interested. Because I had so many rejections before, and you know, I called him. He said, Mr. Mizell, your son killed me. Absolutely killed me. I have never, never come across such a talent in my life. And I've quite a lot of talents. There was once a boy who conducted an orchestra at a very early age, but he never rehearsed the orchestra. When he came to do the performance, the father rehearsed the orchestra. Now, conducting, one of them was the power of an orchestra, one of the skills is to rehearse the orchestra. That's where the real knowledge comes in, to be able to convey what you want and to be able to know the music so that you can make corrections. You have to know the music very well so you can say, stop, you know, what you did this, do that. Especially a guest conductor, for instance, of an orchestra is always on the spot. They always test him. Your orchestra will test a guest conductor, like you should test a substitute teacher in school. Same idea. Just to see, let's see what he knows. Just to see whether they should respect him or not. If he doesn't make a good showing, they'll play for him, but they don't play very hard. But if he can inspire their respect, they'll play very hard for him. So, where was I?
Mr. Bakalennikov saying that your son killed
him. Yeah. So he said, I'd like to give a lesson every day for 6 months. And then we'll see. You know, can't tell really completely. We'll see what happens.
What was Bakalennikov's position at that point?
He was... at that time he was not yet with the symphony. Oh yes, of course he was. So I went there. He was the associate conductor and principal viola player. Very tough. He himself was a prodigy. He was a professional musician at the age of 9, playing in cafes in Russia.
And that was with the Los Angeles Symphony?
No, that was with the
Philharmonic?
With the Pittsburgh Symphony.
No, I remember him at the Pittsburgh Symphony. I mean, when he was in L.A. teaching Lorne, and he was associate conductor and viola player. Was that in Los Angeles, or was it already
in Pittsburgh? No, that was in Pittsburgh. He came to Pittsburgh.
I knew he came to Pittsburgh. So Lorne, at what point did you move?
Tenured, when Lorne was 10 years of age.
Okay, all right.
He already could study with Bach then for 3 years.
Okay, and what was Bakalinnikov, what was his position, and what was he doing at the time that Lauren was seven and that he gave him 6 months of conducting instructions? Was that still in California?
That was still in California. He was then working whatever he could in the studio, doing some work in the studio.
Okay.
He had eight brothers. They were all conductors, and they all played an instrument.
Okay, so then he moved to Pittsburgh?
Yeah, he was, Reiner, who was then a conductor, wanted him to be his viola player and his associate conductor.
That was Fritz Reiner.
Fritz Reiner. And that's why we came to Pittsburgh. We just followed Bakalinnikov.
Oh.
See, we were living in California.
Okay.
But Laura was doing so well with him that I felt we just didn't want to interrupt that teaching.
So you moved to Pittsburgh?
Pittsburgh.
You were very adaptable for your own career and
well,
your wife.
It was a big chance we took because he thought he'd get me a job at university teaching, but I never went to university myself. So that if I had graduated university, it might have been maybe for 2 years, I might have got it, but didn't. Anyway, I started teaching on my own. Teaching voice, and I found it teaching violin even, although I'm not a violinist, but the method that learned violin after leaving his aunt was started by a man that I knew in California, who had a system. He started the first baby orchestra, by the way. Taken from 3 years old.
What was his name?
Carl Moldrum, and he got very famous in America. His little baby orchestra was on Pathé News at one time. We have a picture of Laurie, that's a orchestra.
Mr. Mazzell, in giving Lauren all this training, I would just like to know, curious, did you have what the charges were for the hours of work that the Bakalinnikov did, and were there charges or that you had to pay? Or
no, we did pay him in different manner later on. He wanted to do this on his own because he was very much interested.
So you're now in Pittsburgh, and Lauren is 10 years old, and you're teaching voice, and your wife has she started with the Youth Symphony, or?
Not yet, not right away,
okay.
No. She also started to teach herself piano. And then she became interested in the Pittsburgh Symphony. And she did some marvelous things. She started the Tiny Tots, that was her idea.
Yeah.
And a fantastic thing she got. She was able to get a hold, she was able to get the bus company to supply the buses.
To transport the children, yes, I
remember
that.
Not at all.
Now, when Lauren came here, 10 years old, did you put him into public school, or did you continue tutoring him?
Now the school, I forgot to mention, when he was in California, the principal of that school was a character. A woman, and she recognized Lauren's talent also, and said he doesn't have to go to school all day. He's involved in music. Why don't you let him go to school a half day? And he won't miss anything. And that's what he did. From that point on, he only went a half day. When he came here, I made the same arrangements.
And where did he start here? What school?
Linden School.
Linden.
I came to Pittsburgh and I wanted to know what was the best school in Pittsburgh. Because I was going to drive Lauren to wherever he was. He didn't have to live in the same neighborhood. I was very naive about it. I went to the Board of Education as the head of the Board of Education. What was the best school? He looked around, he got up and he closed the door. I didn't realize at the time why. Anyway, He told me, it was Linden School. That's the best school. Miss Patterson. I don't know if you know about her.
Pardon me?
Miss Patterson.
Oh, my goodness, yes.
Yeah, she was a principal.
Did she later go on to Colfax, or did she stay with London?
I don't know.
Okay. Well,
she was
unique.
Yes, she was unique. Very cooperative. So he went to high school, and even through high school.
And where did he go to high school?
Westinghouse? No. Peabody.
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 And he went half?
Half day. And meantime, Mark Lenko wanted him to conduct a bit for symphony. Mr. Reiner wouldn't allow it. He wouldn't allow it.
So how did this concert, when Lauren was 12 years old, that I attended,
well,
how did that come about?
That came about. Part of Mark Lenko's job was to conduct concerts for the high schools. So Mark Lenko gave Lauren half of his concerts to conduct. So he had the ability, the experience of conducting a Pittsburgh Symphony Orchestra. What's different? It was not a public performance. It was not a high school. It wasn't a serious art. It was a conducting an orchestra. That's the basis of the training. See? And Mark Lenko was very smart about that as well, but very generous. Give him, let him do those concerts.
So Mr. Reiner finally succumbed to having the...
He let him do that. I don't know how he got around to do that. And then, what did you hear him do? Was it soloist?
I was 11 years old, and I remember him in knee socks.
Yeah.
And here, my world, I had no control over my life, and here is this child standing in his knee socks. I'll never forget it. And he's conducting, and all these people are watching and listening to him. And I remember asking my mother, how does somebody that little? She explained it to me. So I don't remember what he played. All I remember was the Pittsburgh Symphony, and I went with my mother and father.
Well, I'm going to tell you.
It was Sunday afternoon. I remember that.
I'm a very profound believer in the philosophy of reincarnation. I profoundly believe in this. And I think a prodigy is sort of a proof. How can a 7-year-old boy or 8-year-old boy not only conduct an orchestra, but to rehearse it? And I witnessed one during a performance, the Tchaikovsky Marshlov, suddenly it started to fall apart. One section came in too soon. This is not a professional orchestra, although the orchestra is composed of music majors from all over the United States, men in their 25, 30. Someone makes a mistake, and if that is a real professional orchestra, then the next person follows them, you know, and compounds the mistake. And this was happening, and it was getting worse, slowing down. Lauren wouldn't stop. He kept conducting and looking at the musician and keeping it going. And right before it was almost dead, he got it together. You know, and he never had such an experience. Now that requires a remarkable knowledge and control of the score, not to fall apart yourself, you know, because it was getting worse and worse. And he never gave up. He kept doing it, looking at the musicians, and kept it together until they really got together, and then it was easy sailing. But that performance of doing that at the age of 8, you know, with no experience, how can that be? We learn to do by doing, by experiencing, by having the experience to do it.
So reincarnation is your answer to this.
So, in other words, now we used to say, he was born with a gift. Well, the gift he gave to himself in a former life. He had developed this to this point, because the Hindus tell you that whatever development you have when you lost your life, your goal, is not wasted. Everything is intact. And when you are reborn again, whatever that is, you are born with that equipment, whatever it was. And usually, you are reborn, if that what you're doing is very meaningful to you, you are reborn in circumstances which support this or encourage it.
Does Lauren feel this way?
I don't know. He is in the Buddhist, found the Buddha. I've never tried to talk to him about this new illusion, or he knows how I feel about it.
I'm curious about something. This is sort of a natural thing to go to. What was what kind of a religious environment where was your home?
Very scanty. My mother was religious. She was the she knew all the prayers and would do it. Do the chatting with the challah, and do the praying with the veil and so forth. She followed that. My father was a freethinker, didn't believe in that at all. And so I was very much that way myself, although I was bar mitzvah. I was bar mitzvah because my father had promised his father that he would bar mitzvah every son that he would have. So I was bar mitzvah, my brother was bar mitzvah. Then we had a third brother who was not...